Yes, listeners, it's time to share the latest reason for you to quit smoking. This time it's not looming lung cancer or even an additional tax. It's called third-hand smoke, and it's potentially deadly. Like I was, you're probably curious about what third-hand smoke can possibly be. Well, reported in the New York Times, it's a term coined by a Harvard study group that looked at what smoking leaves behind, the, quote, invisible yet toxic brew of bases and particles clinging to smokers' hair and clothing, not to mention cushions and carpeting, that lingers long after secondhand smoke has cleared a room. The residue includes heavy metals, carcinogens, and even radioactive materials that young children can get on their hands and ingest, especially if they're crawling or playing on the floor, unquote. Well, it certainly sounds disgusting, and clearly it's dangerous. And to learn more about this potential for danger from third-hand smoke, we've asked Dr. Donna Bakke, chair of the Department of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at SUNY Upstate, to take us behind the headline. Good morning, Dr. Bakke.
Good morning.
And welcome back. So tell us about third-hand smoke. It's invisible. We can smell it. It's there, isn't it?
Yes, and it's something that people don't really think about. We know when we're smelling the smoke if someone's smoking in a room with us. But what this is, these are a lot of particles, some of which can cause cancer, some of which can be very irritating, that we can't even see and linger in the air, linger on clothing, linger on cushions for a long period of time. So even after someone's left a room, we could be inhaling this if we're in that room.
Well, you know, I know that if you walk into a room where smokers have been, if you're not a smoker, boy, it just jumps right out at you. And that's what you're talking about,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's all of those chemicals that are coming off of the carpeting, the cushions, anything in that room, drapes.
And they've all been left there by somebody who smoked, and those particles have just settled into those things?
They do. They settle onto it, and then a lot of them are gases, so then they come back into the air at some other period of time. And so that's what you're smelling, these particles in the air that you're not seeing.
Well, here's a list from that New York Times article that reported on the Harvard study. This is the list of carcinogens that are found then in these rooms, the leave-behinds, let's call them. Hydrogen cyanide, which is used in chemical weapons. Butane, which is used in lighter fluid. Toluene, found in paint thinners. I've not heard of that one. Arsenic, lead, carbon monoxide, and even, this one will get you, polonium-210, the highly radioactive carcinogen that was used to murder former Russian spy Alexander Litvinenko in 2006. 11 of the compounds are highly carcinogenic, and that's according to this article. These are all things you're aware of?
Yes. These are things that scientists have been aware of for a long period of time. It's just very difficult for people to understand when you're using very big words what they mean. Basically, they're just a lot of chemicals that either are produced from the burning of the tobacco or that have been actually put into the cigarette to stabilize it, that when they get on carpeting, clothing, drapes, can stick there, but a lot of them are gases, and they can then come back into the air, and we may not even smell them, and we may be inhaling them. And I think one of the things as a pediatrician that I do is I tell people that you may be smoking in your living room, and your baby may be back in their bedroom, and you may not think that the baby's getting exposed, but because the air is circulating in your house, all of these chemicals are going through that air, and the baby is inhaling those, even if you can't smell it.
Anyway, and then I've got to think, you set the baby on the floor, for instance, even on a blanket or something like that, those particles are still there.
Yes. And one of the other things that I often tell people is that if they smoke and they have particularly babies in their house or children, use a smoking jacket. Go outside. Put that somewhere in the garage or somewhere not near anybody. And then this way, when you come back and you're holding that child's not inhaling those chemicals.
Ah, from the clothing you've been wearing. All right. Well, you know, about more than a year ago, I think you were here, and we were talking about the effects of secondhand smoke. A new report had come out about that. And we were talking about the fact that parents are smoking inside houses. They're smoking inside their cars. And then their children are there, and they're inhaling the smoke directly. So that's kind of like the second level of exposure, right?
Right.
But then I know, you know, you go to a non-smoking building and say all the employees who smoke step outside, and they're smoking just outside the door, and you can smell that. Is that also a danger to us?
Yes, because if you're smelling it, then you're inhaling a lot of these chemicals. But even if you're not smelling it, if they're right by an intake to that building,
right,
it's getting into the air, and someone on the fourth floor could be inhaling it and not know it.
Wow. Now, I also know there are parents who think that, say they smoke in their car, well, I'll roll the window down, and I'll smoke with the window down. Or, you know, there's a fan in the house, and I'll blow it out the window. But gosh, this third-hand smoke kind of thing makes that seem like that's not particularly helpful either.
It really isn't. Some of the smoke obviously is going out the window, but a lot of that smoke is sticking to the seats, to the carpeting, to other things that are in that car. And if you're not doing that when you don't have children in, if you're smoking while you don't have children in the car, a lot of that is sticking this way when anybody else sits in that car. They're getting exposed because those gases are going to be coming off the seats and the carpeting.
Sure. And even sticking in the baby's car seats.
Yes.
Yeah, it gets them that much closer to it. Do we have any idea how long these toxins stay in that environment? For instance, you go to a hotel room, and now they'll designate a room as a non-smoking room, but you swear you've walked in the door and somebody was in there smoking at some time. It could have been maybe years ago.
We don't really, the studies don't really know how long after it, but we do know that they're gases and they're very light so that they can stick to something and go. It could be days to weeks after someone's been in there.
Okay. And I know, too, that there are people this time of the year in particular who are giving up smoking, a wonderful thing that they're giving up smoking. But is there anything they can do about those toxins that are still in their house? I mean, if they wash the drapes, for instance, or get upholstery cleaner or something like that, what can they do to clean it up?
The best way to get rid of it is obviously to change whatever you have in the house. So change your drapes, change the cushions, change your carpeting if you can.
Paint your walls.
Wash your walls, mm-hmm. and then paint. Well, the paint, obviously, you may be exposed to other chemicals. But if you can't do that, then certainly cleaning will help. But these particles are so small, and they release at infrequent times,
mm-hmm.
that it's really going to be hard to get rid of all of them unless you totally get rid of it.
It is. And it's not like you can take one of those aerosol spray cans of something that smells better and spray it in the room and improve things, can you?
No.
No, not at all.
It's not going to work.
So now, last year we talked about secondhand smoke. This year we're talking about thirdhand smoke. Is there a fourthhand smoke that we're going to hear about next year?
As far as I know, no. This seems to be the only ways that people can get exposed, either directly smoking, by being in a room where someone's smoking, or by being in a room where someone has smoked and being exposed to these chemicals.
Well, Dr. Donna Bakke, thanks so much for stopping by this morning. We have a better understanding of third-hand smoke, and certainly I think we all need to avoid it for one more reason.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. New Year's Resolutions 09. What? We already did that. Or, I'll never dance again. Well, dear listeners, one of my New Year's resolutions was that whenever gravity yanks my glasses to the ground, not to leave them there, even for a second. I made this resolution because a day or two before our annual opportunity to rectify regrets, I was laboriously pushing cold, white, crystalline structures off a trot and spot space for our pooch, Wink, in the formerly green haven behind our abode. It was dark. I was grunting and bending and scooping, and my glasses headed towards China. I noted their relative position in the universe and thought, oh, I'll get them in a second. And indeed I did, but not until an elegant yet slightly less than Fred Astaire-ish step of my snow-booted Tootsie had transformed them from a marvel of high-tech vision correction into random pieces of tin and polycarb. So as the stoppers were popped off the bottles of bubbly, I resolved to avoid storing my specs anywhere below my ears, and I swore off dancing on them totally. And you know how last week I told you that making a New Year's resolution increases the odds of successful behavior change 10 times over? Well, last night I was doing a bending and plucking cleanup pickup of my jogging stuff in my recently graduated from college, who knows if he'll be moving back home soon, son's bedroom, now serving as the walk-in laundry basket for my sneaks and shorts and sweats. And didn't my new and vastly improved implements of vision enhancement fall to the floor? And didn't my wondrous neck-up center of all things intelligent return my resolution to glorious consciousness, but then get trumped by the sirens of procrastination who sang to me, oh, I can see those plain as day. I'll grab them momentarily. And didn't my aforementioned quintuple toed appendage of locomotion and recreational striding respond to that melodious, reassuring cognitive yodeling with another elegant but still slightly less than Fred Astaire-ish tap of the toe and sole, yielding a rhythmic but disconcertingly familiar crunch, crunch, crunch? Oh, what are we to do? How to triumph over the sirens of procrastination and excuse? How to keep plugging, knowing that if we do, we can be counted in the 45% of us who'll succeed in 6 months or less if we keep at it? The center answers, why, we'll outplan and, of course, outsing them. So, see how you bail, Gail. Make a new plan, Stan. Put it in place, Grace. Check how it go, Joe. If there ain't no prize, guys, do it all over, Rover. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.